Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Wow, Jim, you look very snazzy today. Nice tuxedo.
Thanks, Patrick. I wanted to look stylish and swinging for this episode.
Well, you sure do, man. And I see you already have a mixed drink there.
Yeah, you'll never catch me without a drink in my hand. And I'm never far from the action. Ring-a-ding-ding kind of guy, right down to the soles of my shoes.
Man, ain't that a kick in the head.
Okay, Patrick, it's been a while, but it's time to make a visit back to the Book Nook, right? Patrick's Book Nook, special place to be. Patrick's Book Nook, he reads music history. Hey, welcome to the Book Nook. Look, we have books. And over there, another book. And right over there, it's Kindle?
Wasn't that great theme music?
And thanks to Mike Wagner for the incredible theme music for the Book Nook. I played on that too. It was a collaboration between me and Mike.
It was great.
I got myself on the back. We need to do more Book Nook so we can hear that song.
Hang on. Before you get to the actual music book of the day, let's introduce ourselves, because some people might be new to the show and they're interested in this particular artist. This is not kind of a little different for us in terms of music, but I'm excited about it. The show is Rockin' the Suburbs, and I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
All right, and we're coming at you from Northern Virginia, the suburbs of Washington, D.C.
Suburbs, ba-bam.
Got 50,000 watts.
Across the border.
That's right. All right.
So, totally well said, Jim. I like to read books about all kinds of entertainers and musicians, and I may have mentioned at one point I read a biography of Bing Crosby that was quite excellent. There's a two-volume biography out there, and this entertainer, you know, was influenced by Bing a little bit, as all, you know, kind of singers were, and the person is Dean Martin.
Dean Martin, yeah.
Yeah. So, the book is by Nick Toches, and it is called Dino, Living High in the Dirty Business of Dreams. It was published in 1992, so it's been out there for a long time. I found it on Amazon Kindle on special for 99 cents, so I wanted to read it. Now, I will say as a caveat, if anybody is going to follow in my footsteps, I don't know how they transferred this book to Kindle. But however it was done, there's not a tremendous amount of care that was taking place, because somewhere about halfway through the book, all the letter I all switched to the number one.
Oh, no.
And all the apostrophes are completely out of place in words in contractions like don't and can't and all that stuff. So it kind of throws you for a loop.
But that's on the Kindle version. So there was some glitch in the system. It's not like it didn't happen in the editing process, we don't think, right?
No, not at all. Okay, I would love to, if I ever see a used copy of this book, I'll definitely pick it up because I thought it was so entertaining. But yeah, that was weird. I don't know. That could be a whole nother show. It's like, how do you transfer a book, an old paperback or hardback to Kindle? I don't know how they do it. You know, there must be some scanning process, I would imagine, but
black magic.
Yeah, that's what it is. But anyway, really, really interesting book. So I'll tell you, Nick Toches did not interview Dean Martin for this book, but it is written in a very, I don't want to say Hunter S. Thompson or Gonzo style, but it's really written from the point of view, of, you know, Dean trying to really get into what made him so popular and so attractive to women and so idolized by men and all this stuff. And basically what I knew of Dean Martin going into this book was he was in the Rat Pack, right? With, Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr. And I knew he sung songs like, I don't know, That's Amore or Volare or something like that. So, that was really interesting to me. What I did not know is pretty much everything else. really want to ask you about this too, Jim. He was the son of Italian immigrants, and they lived in Steubenville, Ohio. So yes. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Steubenville or where it is in relationship to Toledo.
Well, only because I have looked it up.
Oh, okay.
So no, it's not like a kind of town that you would know just from living in the state. And in fact, it's like the opposite of where I grew up. So it's in southeastern Ohio, and I grew up in northwest Ohio.
Okay. So it's kind of on the other side.
And the funny thing about Ohio, too, I guess this is true in a lot of states, but Ohio's can be sort of subdivided into different regions, and they really have different personalities to them, right? So,
yeah.
So, by virtue of him growing up in Steubenville, Ohio, does not necessarily relate to, like, my experience. I mean, obviously, there's an age difference as well, but even just, like, environmentally, like, it's northwest Ohio is different, you know, from where he would have been. Now, it is a river town.
Uh-huh.
And I think that plays into some of his upbringing or his background, because some of those river towns were kind of rough.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Yes. Yes.
Exactly. So yeah. That's...
I know that to be true.
Right. So that's a perfect setup, because Dean was the son of a barber from Abruzzo in Italy. They didn't speak English in the barbershop or at home. So he had a hard time. You know, he had a hard time learning English. He didn't speak it very well at first. He was sort of picked on because of that. He dropped out of high school, and he went to work with, like he said, you know, some of the shadier elements, bootleg liquor business delivery for a little while. And then he went on to be a blackjack dealer in some of these casinos that were in back rooms, sometimes of barbershops, right? And speakeasies and things like that. So, you know, we're talking about the 30s, right? Mid 30s. He was also a boxer, a bare knuckle boxer. And he was pretty good. He got up there and won money at it. Then he realized he was actually better at, stealing chips and money from the people who were playing blackjack and slipping them into his pants, you know, and things like that. And, you know, that was a lot safer, and he made more money doing that anyway. And then he started singing. He sang with local orchestras around Steubenville, and he sang in, apparently there's like chop suey restaurants were places that they'd have entertainment in Steubenville at the time. And so he, you know, would do that. He made his way up to Cleveland, sang around there a little bit. And then this part, I had no idea whatsoever that he teamed up with Jerry Lewis.
Right. Oh, you didn't know that?
I did not. I had no clue that Martin and Lewis were a thing. I don't know how I missed this, but I never knew it. Yeah. And this part was fascinating to me. I don't know what you know about them, but I guess they were kind of a slapstick, you know, comedy duo. They would play off each other. Jerry Lewis was the, you know, kind of the jester, the fool, you know, would make all the funny voices and funny faces. And Dino would be a straight man, I guess. And, right?
Totally it. You know, had sort of like the good looking, you know, straight man type. And then you had the clown type character, right?
Exactly.
And that was Jerry Lewis. And they did all these road pictures, right?
Amazing. Yeah. I, like, no idea. And they would play for like 2 weeks at the Copacabana and, you know, places like that. And they made it on the Ed Sullivan Show, and Dino would sing a couple songs, I guess, during the show. And, you know, they became like a really massive act, right? It was incredible. They had a radio series, and they were making millions of dollars, like in the mid-40s and late-40s. It was really incredible. And then I guess at some point, you know, there was tension over the money and who was going to be a star, and Jerry Lewis wanted to go on his own, blah, blah, blah. And, and about, I guess they were together for about 10 years, but they were massively successful. And during all this time, you know, Dino was recording, records here and there. I don't think he had signed to Capitol Records yet, but the book is written in such an interesting way. You really get inside, you know, you get a feeling for what that must have been like, you know, to be a nightclub performer at that time. It talks about, you know, the drinking and staying up after the show till dawn and sleeping, you know, and, you know, playing 2 to 3 weeks at the casino and trying to have a wife, you know, during all this. So you really get the feeling of it. It's really well done.
It's funny you bring that up, because we tend at our age and when we grew up, we tend to think of that sort of rock star lifestyle as being invented you know, maybe in the 60s or whatever, right? And, you know, Jim Morrison or, you know, what have you, right? But it existed before then.
Yeah,
it
just, without a doubt.
It wasn't broadcast, I think, to the public in the same way, right?
Right, right.
They lived that kind of lifestyle, but they didn't necessarily want to make it part of their persona, their public persona. You know, wasn't great necessarily marketing tool, right?
Yes.
But guys who were in that world, they worked hard and, you know, they partied hard too, right?
Yes, and so absolutely. There was that. Mm-hmm.
And, but Dean Martin did have the sort of drinking as part of his shtick, right?
Yeah, that was always his thing. You know, he always had a drink in his hand, a cigarette, and you know,
but it was sort of playful, right? It was sort of like a wink and a nod, right? They, you know, but
anyway, right. Yeah. Well, it's interesting in the book. One of his one of the acts that opened for him, I forget exactly who it was right now, but they said, Dino taught me to put ice in a beer and make it last, you know, like a long time, you know, and people thought it was a mixed drink or, you know, he would drink ginger ale and all this stuff, but he always had a drink in his hand, like all day long, you know, but he never actually, you know, he had to be coherent to function. Right.
It was partly an act.
Yeah. Right, it definitely was part of that persona that he put on.
I'm praying for rain in California so the grapes can grow and they can make more wine. And I'm sitting in a honky in Chicago with a broken heart and a woman on my mind. I matched the man behind the bar for the jukebox, and the music takes me back to Tennessee. When they ask who's a fool in the corner crying, I say a little old wine drinker me.
And then, you know, the other really interesting part of this book, too, is the development of Las Vegas right around this time, you know, and, you know, now we're not going to have, you know, the Copa in Atlantic City and, you know, places in L.A. maybe or Chicago, these big nightclubs, or Miami was another place they would go and play. But now there was going to be this amazing mecca in the desert. And, you know, Dino, Frank Sinatra, Sammy, all those guys were the, you know, archetype of what a Vegas entertainer was, a good looking guy in a tuxedo, you know, singing, telling a few jokes, singing the standards, entertaining the gamblers and the people that came to Vegas. And he just, you know, that part of his career just, grew out of, you know, the same way Vegas did, you know, as more hotels and bigger ones, you know, were built, he just moved right along to the Sands and all these places. And, you know, being Italian, he had no problem relating to some of the people that were behind some of these places and booked him and negotiating and all that. He was, you know, he fell right in with that and also, you know, started doing movies. And it's really interesting in this book to read how, like, Dino was the first one there. You know, despite this partying image, he knew his lines and he knew everyone else's lines as well. He was like the consummate professional. And, you know, there's tons of those movies he did in the 50s, late 50s. And, you know, at one point he even got this image as kind of a, you know, a tough guy, like a cowboy, you know, kind of a guy. But he could also do things like musical comedy, like Bells Are Ringing and all this other stuff, too. And then, you know, he really fell in with Frank and there was the whole Rat Pack thing. And, you know, that's kind of what I knew about. But his singing career is interesting. I don't think necessarily he is what you would call a groundbreaking singer in any way. I mean, I think he was pretty heavily indebted to like, the Mills Brothers and Bing Crosby and Perry Como, right? And people like that. Yes. And he eventually developed his own, you know, style, and he was a pretty darn good singer. You know, I mean, anybody could sing duets with Frank, you know, you had to be pretty good, right? this is a funny anecdote in the book, is his son, one of his sons, was really enamored of the Beatles in the early 60s when they first came over. And Dino said, I'm going to knock that one of their hits off the top of the charts, boy. You just watch me. And sure enough, he had this tune, Everybody Loves Somebody, which knocked A Hard Day's Night off the number one spot. Yeah. And he went back to his son and said, I told you so.
Everybody loves somebody sometimes. Everybody falls in love somehow. Something in your kiss just told me my sometime is now. Everybody finds somebody someplace. There's no telling where love may appear. Something in my heart keeps saying my someplace is here. If I had it in my power, I'd arrange for every girl to have your charm. Then every minute, every hour, every boy would find what I found in your arms. Everybody loves somebody sometime. And although my dream was overdue, your love made it well worth waiting for someone like you.
Yeah, and that's the other thing I think people have lost a sense of. If you can Google all this stuff now, and you can go back and look at the Billboard, you know, Hot 100 in the 60s. We tend to think now, because of the way, you know, history has been written, that it was like wall-to-wall rock music.
Right.
That was the popular music of the 60s, you know, certainly since the British invasion and on, right? But that wasn't really the case. Yes, that Beatles obviously were hugely popular, and the Stones and all that kind of stuff. But right there on the charts was a lot of this kind of like lounge music, standard, you know, those kind of old, you know, old school singers were still making hit records, you know?
Yep, absolutely.
At the same time.
And, you know, Nick in the book goes into this really interesting part about, Dino influencing Elvis Presley. And Elvis did record a couple of songs that Dean recorded in a very, very similar style that weren't released, you know, kind of until later. But he makes a pretty compelling argument that, you know, that was one of Elvis's sort of ballad singing idols. And then later in Elvis's career, when he was in Vegas, you know, he was doing in the Elvis way, but he was still doing that, you know, Vegas entertainer residency act. So it's a compelling argument. I also learned about Peter Lawford, who was part of the Rat Pack, his relationship to the Kennedys, and how Frank was very, very interested in politics and helping out the Kennedys, whereas Dino didn't really want any part of the political part of it at all. Although all those guys were very supportive of civil rights and, you know, did a lot of things for equality, I think, that you might not, you know, necessarily think of when you think of Dean Martin. So that part was kind of interesting, too.
I think this is really fascinating because I always kind of like Dean Martin. Like, I have Sinatra records. I probably have a couple of Tony Bennett, let's say, things like that. And I admire those records.
Yeah.
I love how great, you know, what command they have of their voice, and especially like the phrasing and all of that. Right. And you could say like the, you know, and certainly like Sinatra with the Nelson Riddle Orchestra, like those are just such well put together records. But you put on a Dean Martin record and you kind of felt like he was a little bit more closer to like the rock star of that time, because there's way more sort of feeling and attitude in his stuff.
I agree with that. Yeah, absolutely. That's really well said, Jim. Yeah, he's got an edge to him that, you know, is a little more authentic than, you know, just, you know, like you said, something you can appreciate or something that feels like it's from a frozen era in time, something. Yeah.
And I really like the song, Ain't That a Kick in the Head?
Yes.
How
lucky can one guy be? I kissed her and she kissed me. Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head? The room was completely black. I hugged her and she hugged back. Like the sailor said, quote, ain't that a hole in a boat? My head keeps spinning. I go to sleep and keep grinning. If this is just a beginning, my life is gonna be beautiful. I've sunshine enough to spread. It's just like the fella said. Tell me quick, ain't love a kick in the head? Like the fella once said, ain't that
I think
a
that's
kick
such a great song, and it's like, because it's like funny and it's just like clever and it's so good. And I put that on our Suburbs Pod 1000 playlist. That's on there. Yes.
I know. That's very cool. Yeah.
I love that song.
Yeah. It's great. And it's a classic Dino track. And the amazing thing is after all this happened, then he went on to have a TV show on NBC, a variety show that ran for like almost 10 years. And that was the same kind of, you know, that banter and all that stuff. I think kind of the last flowering of that. And then there were the Dean Martin roasts, you know, where he would, you know, also be that kind of drunk, obnoxious guy cracking wise, you know, at the end of the table. And this is interesting. I mean, he did get a license plate, one of the first ones, I guess, in California, and it was Drunky, D-R-U-N-K-Y. So if you're asking to be pulled over, it's totally unacceptable these days, of course, but, you know, definitely a different time. And he got into, it got to the point where he was very, very wealthy, you know, also supporting a few ex-wives and his, you know, his career was to the point where he wasn't really doing TV anymore, wasn't really doing movies. He was doing his golf tournament and playing a lot of golf and just kind of living that celebrity lifestyle. What I really found, very moving in the book was the end. Like in the mid 70s, I believe, Frank, you know, had a tour or late 70s, and Dean was really not doing much other than sort of being Dean, right? And playing golf and not going out a lot. And he tried to get Dean to come on this tour. And, you know, it's hard to tell what the effects of, I don't know, years of that lifestyle does. But, you know, Dean was not to the point where he was going to do that. And I think, Toshays really writes, an amazing, gets you inside of what it was like to be that kind of celebrity person, you know, really kind of distanced from reality in many ways because you were Dean Martin, you know, that's who you were. And he writes it in a very moving way. And, and the way the end of his life takes place and all that is interesting. Now, two things that we'll note. His last album was a Nashville record called the Nashville Sessions, which I never knew about. It came out in 1983. And he had a minor hit with a song called I Think I Just Wrote My First Country Song. And then he also appeared in the movie The Cannonball Run and its sequel starring Burt Reynolds.
Yes.
For this man with an incredible, you know, career, that's kind of the way he put a cap on it.
Who wasn't in The Cannonball Run?
I don't know if I've ever seen it. But,
oh, my gosh.
But yeah, you know, I think there's a touching moment in the book where, he had broken, you know, him and Jerry Lewis had not seen each other and spoken to each other for, you know, going on 20 years and Sinatra, tricked Dean into coming on to Jerry's telethon. He didn't think Jerry was going to be there, the muscular dystrophy telethon. And they came out and had a public reconciliation. So that was, you know, a pretty interesting moment that they finally did make up, after all that. So definitely really interesting, worth a read. And if you're like me and don't know much about it, you learn a lot about not only, Dean's career, but a lot of the career of evolution of entertainment that's before rock and roll that that people like us, we don't really think of, that much. This not from the book, but I learned by, looking something else up that, Route 7 through Steubenville was, renamed Dean Martin Boulevard.
Nice.
So if you're driving through the main street, right.
As it should be. All right.
So, yeah, check that out, guys. I'm sure you can find it on Amazon or a used bookstore for, you know, a couple bucks. But
what's the book called again?
Dino, Living High in the Dirty Business of Dreams.
Nice.
So, really
nice.
Well done.
Check this out. All right.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So, it's a different one.
That is. I like that, though. Okay.
Yeah.
And I do think there's something important to, I think at least, like learning about the stuff that,
yeah,
that predated, you know, Sun Records and
totally
and
yeah
the British invasion and all that kind of stuff,
right?
Like,
right,
like where, what was hot before then, or what did people enjoy, or
yeah,
how did that all work, you know? So anyway,
right,
and okay,
and just, you know, that whole lifestyle that he developed. I mean, you know, and one last thing I'll say that I found really, really fascinating in the book, like at one point during his shows in Vegas, He, since of his experience, he would like sing on stage. Then he would go into the casino and deal blackjack. And people were like, oh, I'm going to play at Dean Martin's table. Like, he would do that.
That's
crazy.
So great. That's,
I know.
So great.
Amazing stuff.
All right. Very
really,
cool.
Really fun read.
That's great. Okay. Yeah, I'm sure. Colorful life, right?
Yep. Really colorful. He lived a lot of lives within that time. Yeah.
Yep. Okay, very good. If anybody else would like to comment on Dean Martin, maybe if you've read this book, or even if you haven't, you just want to talk about Dean Martin, we'd love to hear it. That would be
absolutely
great.
Absolutely.
You can call and leave a message, and we'll put your voice on an upcoming show,
612-440-1984.
Right. Or you can email rock@suburbspod.com.
Yep.
Or comment on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. All of our accounts are @suburbspod. All right. Let's get out of here.
Sounds good.
All right. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
When marimba rhythms start to play, dance with me, make me sway. Like a lazy ocean hugs the shore, hold me close, sway me more. Like a flower bending in the breeze, bend with me, sway with ease. When we dance, you have a way with me. Stay with me, sway with me. Other dancers may be on the floor, dear, but my eyes will see only you. Only you have the magic technique. When we sway, I grow weak. I can hear the sound of violins long before it begins. Make me thrill as only you know how. Sway me smooth, sway me now.
And anywhere in those 1,008 pages do they explain the allure of the scoreless draw?